Hello and welcome everybody. This is the big show. Yep, the show where we talk about, well, everything except for Apple that's going on in tech. Wow, that went off the rails already. Yeah, as always, I have with me, I'm the I host, the interim, I don't know how many interims hosts, stepping in for Yuan Ranking, for Jeff Gamet, for Yuan, for Jeff, for you, I don't know, just keep going. Patrice, that's me, and I have with me, as always, a really cool, really awesome panel, and let's start with Ian. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. This week's been more teaching. I've been teaching our certification track class this week to engineers. That's been fun, as always. Mm-hmm. 3 to 4 days of working CET for a Brit is nice, apart from sort of 11 o'clock lunches and things like that. But oh well. Kind of, it messes with your head a little bit. But yes. Otherwise, it's been. But you finish earlier in the day, and so it's all
because,
good.
Because also the Germans have to have lunch at noon. Like.
Yeah. Oh, a story about that. When I was working in Sweden, they start to get itchy around about 11:45. Mm-hmm. If lunch hasn't been suggested or it looks like it's going to go on, you can see them all shuffling in their seat. It was the first day I was kind of coming on, because I was thinking, yeah, I could probably get this one done and we'll go about 12:30. That'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. They're all shifting in their seats, looking at their clock, looking at their watch and thinking, oh okay. So you go with it because it's how it is. Mm-hmm. But yes, yeah.
So certification. So now they're all allowed to fly to Mars.
They are allowed to fly to Mars. That's nice. An optional extra. Yeah. Trip back Trip back is that you can get there, but you're not getting back. No, that's extra. But no, it's the Veeam certified engineer course, basically. The MCE.
So now you can Veeam people to another planet. No.
We can Veeam them to another planet, absolutely. All sorts of good things. So yeah, we've done that. We've been doing that this week. So
nice. Very cool.
That's that out with.
So and everybody passed?
Well, won't know yet. They've done is they've passed the course. That means they're entitled now to take the exam. A lot of it's our existing engineer group that got sort of 3 or 4 versions ago certs and now need to refresh them.
Okay.
They know what they're doing, and then they're picking up the odd thing which is new that they might not have seen. And the nice thing about, we got a really good lab set, so they can break stuff and have a mess around with stuff that they wouldn't otherwise be able to do when you're with a customer. Mm-hmm. If you want to, what happened if I tried that? And you can do that now.
What if I click delete all? What does happen?
Yeah. Yeah. What happens if we've got a load of stuff where we, what's really nice about the way they've drawn out this particular version of the class is we have a bad actor. We have so the first half, you learn about all the backup stuff, all the wonderful things we can do. Mm-hmm. The second half, we go through this scenario. We've got a scenario for a customer that kind of leads through the whole class, which again makes it make more sense. And then we have this bad actor that does very stupid things through the course of, so we get to restore fire, you get to restore various different things all the way up to a ransomware attack. From that point of view, it's really quite nice to...
The realistic part of the course, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
The beginning is kind of the nice and shiny and perfect world, and then the second part is, well, and this is real life.
Yeah, this is real life. This is what you might see, and this is how you do it. And so they can get a chance to try it, and they can mess around a bit there. That's what we like, so yeah.
Yeah, that sounds really fun. And I mean, with you as a teacher, they're going to pass, of course.
They've got to now send their emails in to get their voucher for their exams because they work for us. They get a freebie. Otherwise, it's just over 100. It's over 100. It's over $100 if you attend one of our classes that are run by an external provider and then go to Pearson VUE to do the exam. So yeah.
I mean, anyway, a company probably pays for it. So
yeah, they do exactly. it's our exam.
Yeah,
exactly. I've written some of the questions that go in the exam, so you know it's.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of exams, no, I don't know, Tom, how you're doing. I don't know how I got from exams to you, but well, you had an exam, an eye exam.
Yeah,
I did. I did have my eye exam. I did, and I have to admit, last week I was complaining about my AirPods Pro. Because I've had my second pair fail, and this time Apple didn't give me a replacement. Mm-hmm. So guess what I did Tuesday?
Went to the
I
store, got
a new pair.
Oh, you
bought more
because they were like $80 off at Amazon.
Ooh, nice.
Because I'm assuming there people think they're going to release new ones, and they're clearing, the usual thing with Apple where they clear out inventory.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, $80 off is, yeah, that sounds like someone is clearing out shelves.
Yeah, so instead of 250, it was, 160 before
Oh,
tax.
that is a really nice price. Yeah. Other
Yeah,
than
it
that,
was.
all good in California now. I heard weather was nice, as always.
We've had some rain actually,
Ooh,
but which is good
which
when
is
we need
good,
rain.
actually, yeah.
It's still wintertime. It's not warm here, but it's not freezing cold.
He says complaining about it not being whatever, it
It's
not being
50.
t
What?
30 degrees, so
What's
70,
50? 50 is about 15
15, yeah.
Celsius. Yeah, so it's about 15.
We're like at zero or something, so
Not my fault, Patrice.
yeah. I think we're just, as I said, on the other hand, it's rare that like it like stuff burns here, so I guess.
That's
It
true.
has
We
its
have, yeah.
upsides and its downsides.
Yeah,
That's
we were
true.
frozen solid this morning. It's sort of like, I think just minor. It was -3, -4 this morning.
Yeah.
Been much like it's the earlier in the week has been warmer, but I think we're going for a cold bit now. I think it's going to be
Same here.
about it's going to be about 3-ish now for the next few days. Yeah,
Yeah.
3, 4, go up to
Yeah.
about 7 maybe one day.
Ooh.
So yeah.
Summer. British summer. It goes up
Yeah,
to
British
seven.
summer. Oh yes. No, it gets better than that.
No,
In the
no, I was
teens at
kidding.
least. I guess in the teens at least. We got a
20,
little
20 you get usually, 20 something.
And we all
British.
melt if it goes over that, pretty much.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Now, that was kind of a key thing, like early on, first couple of times I came to the UK, to London. I was like, I arrived, and I think it was like, yeah, it might have been even summer or like late spring at least. And I was like, I had like multiple layers, and I was like, oh, it's still cold here. And then I saw people running around in like summer dresses and like shorts and flip-flops, and I'm like, it was like, I don't know, 19 degrees or something Celsius.
Yeah,
So,
that's
and I'm
sun's out,
like,
guns out weather.
and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, completely.
So
Yeah.
for the Americans, that's about 70. So
Yeah. Yeah.
that I was like, okay, that must be summer for them, because for me, it's way too cold for that. But yes,
People
people are
here
used
wear
to.
puffy jackets out when it's 75 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, sounds it sounds about right. I mean, that's kind of like Arizona. It's like
Yeah. Right.
wind.
You
I
can
mean, I
always
always
tell
say
that.
winter is when they wear socks with flip flops.
Yeah. Here you can always tell the newly arrived sort of people from somewhere else. I mean, particularly we had a company in the center of the city that had an Indian day at the center. Quite often some guys would come across to work with them. And you could see them when they were in town because it
Like
would be
big
summer here.
jackets.
Yeah, exactly. So summer here, and we're walking around in shirt sleeves and going, "Oh, it's a lovely day." And there'd be guys walking around looking cold in jackets, and you realize that the guys that come over for a couple of weeks and they're all frozen. And we have that nightmare every time we have a conference when we've got a room full of people that are either from the deepest Nordics where anything above freezing is warm, to people that live in the Middle East where 100 degrees is kind of like normal, and so there's nothing. You can never keep anyone happy.
Yeah, I
Room
mean
keepers
that's
never keep anyone happy.
I mean, you don't need people from like different parts of the world to keep them happy. Like that you can have within one country. It's like,
Yeah.
or two, even within the same city, like no two people will agree on what the right temperature is.
We've discovered the best way to do this is to lie. This may be a secret I'm
Okay.
letting out now
Yeah.
to the public,
Okay.
but if you ever complain that it's a bit warm in the room and someone says, "Yeah, we'll go and make a change to it now, see if it feels any better," and they come back and check with you, they've done nothing. We've just walked away for a little while, counted to 10, walked back again.
Yeah, I
Because
think.
overall, it's all subjective and no one notices.
That's
But
true.
that generally seems to keep everybody happy.
I think we have a
If they
show
come back and
title
say, "Oh, it's still a little
already.
cold," I say, "Oh, we'll have another fiddle with it a bit later, see what we can do." And they generally go, "They're off with, well, right. Someone's cared enough to answer. Someone's cared enough to respond."
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I think we already have a show title. The secret is to lie.
Yeah, secret always, always.
Good to know.
Bluff,
Yeah,
bluff, and bluff some more.
speaking of show, should we do a show?
Yeah, go on
Kind
then.
of. Okay, so who has the first story? That would be Ian, and this time nobody cheated, so wow.
No, fastest
Impressive.
finger first there.
Wow, first its finger, something about
It's
Google Chrome.
Google. It's Google. Well, not even Google Chrome, it's broader. So remember Google and the tracking cookies and all of that madness. And that kind of went away. And it's still round. And now they're talking about something worse. The thing we thought bogged off a
Of
while ago, but it's
course.
coming back. Digital fingerprinting.
And of
And
course,
the
it's Google. So
and
of course they're
it's
talking about
Google,
something
yeah.
worse.
Yeah, so digital fingerprinting is a thing that may well start to return. So even if you say don't track me or whatever else, they're going to still use metrics. So digital fingerprints is this idea where they're going to use unique identifiers from the hardware you're connecting to the web with, the sites you visit, the pages, and they're going to build a picture of you based on that. So, and this was something already quite insidious that quite a lot of governments will say, no, this is about our UK security czar thinks it's a bad idea and it shouldn't be done. But it's looking like it might well be implemented as of 10 days' time.
Wow.
There is an there is a there is an upcoming update to platforms and policies, February the 16th. Advances in privacy enhancing technologies, on device processing, everything else. And basically, what they're saying is they're going to start trying to find other ways of fingerprinting, and be able to track and figure out who's looking at what where. So.
The funny thing is, fingerprinting, I remember getting offered fingerprinting services to identify visitors to our company's website 7 or 8 years ago. And then people kind of figured out, this is kind of creepy. So what am I going to do when somebody comes to my website? And then I figure out what their name is because I use this service and I send them an email and say, hey, Jimmy, I see you came to our website. Can I help you with anything? That's not going to be a good thing for the company.
I mean, we went from early in the web, hey, thank you, Tom, for visiting my website and leaving a post on my guest book. Remember
Oh, God, yes.
that? to being tracked, as you said, like, and getting emails of, hey,
Well,
you
this
visited a
is
website
Google.
but didn't buy anything. Can we help you?
But I got to believe people, maybe not Google, but other companies have still been using fingerprinting forever.
Yeah, there's
So what
tons.
do.
I mean, the like to the point that a lot of browser companies like had to remove APIs because they were being used. Like they had legitimate good users, but they were being used to fingerprint you. Like I don't know what plugins you have running or what tabs you have opened sometimes and stuff like that. Where there were good use cases for it, but people just used it for tracking you because they could, if they could, if like I think it was with your browser plugins, that alone was good enough, was usually unique enough that they could figure out who you are. Like across
Well,
websites, basically.
and then you add to it the screen you have, the screen resolution, the version of the browser, the version of the OS, all that stuff.
I
There's
mean, to
enough
the point that
benchmark
that is
to
not
work
being
it out, it's
exposed.
you.
Yeah. Yeah,
Which is,
exactly.
it's just, as they say, it's not a fair means of tracking users online. So reduce people's choice and control how information is collated. Exactly. Or collected even.
And of course Google, I mean Google with Google Chrome and their market share, they have, I mean, they don't have to do anything. They can just track everything in Chrome and just send it to their backend. Like they don't even need to have any fingerprinting. They literally know you your who you are. So So I mean, what was
I thought
also
it was me at
interesting
first.
is how that they're hiding it against again behind, oh, we're advances in privacy enhancing technologies. It's like,
It's colossal nonsense. What's old is it's again, I've said this before here and I'll say it again. It's what old is new. What's old is new. They're bringing it back with a new spin, trying to hope we'll be fooled by it. But oh
So
God, it's
who's going to be the first one to come up with a plugin that scrambles randomly all your profile information and somehow get in between that information and the API or the information pipeline that goes back to
Well, I,
Google?
the danger is, I think, if you do
That
that with Manifest 4 or 5 or whatever the new one's called, they'll probably not let you do it.
No, of course not, because
It'll
that, I
probably
mean,
not let you
Google
do it.
doesn't want you
So,
to do that. So of course they
but
stop you.
there's but there's got to be a way. Let's say I'm on a Windows machine, because Google is grabbing that. I mean, I guess the question is, how is Chrome, for example, grabbing that information, like your screen resolution and all that kind of stuff? But there might be something to do on the on your host side where you
There is ways, definitely. I mean, you can block the outgoing connections,
yeah, you could
which
sandbox,
Google probably also is gonna,
you could sandbox the app.
That's
On
true.
Windows, you can do sandboxing, so you could sandbox
But I
Chrome
think
so
it
it
would be
lived in
more fun.
its own profile more or less without it being able to get to anything else. So you could do that if you really wanted, but
Well, that's what the private browser tabs and all that,
Oh, yeah,
there are
I
various
don't, but
versions of
no, it's
that.
bypassed. It's going to
Price
bypass
is, no, Google doesn't
private
care about
browsing. It
privacy.
doesn't care. Doesn't
They're
care
like,
because it's kind of. So again, you're
But I think it would be more fun to actually put random data in there and just pull all their information.
Yeah. Oh, so you could have your own specialist profile that tells it rubbish. Like it's rare. You're viewing this on a Windows 98 machine with IE6.
Yeah, it just it
It's that sort of thing.
randomly
But
changes. Yeah, the
needs. It's weird because I've started using Chrome again just because it was the most best behaved browser on my work machine, and I'm feeling kind of dirty about using it, but it's been well behaved, so it's better than Chrome, which seems not Edge, which seems to want to eat all my memory for now.
Oh,
Maybe it's improved again. I don't
and next you to, for it to be the default. There's no F off button. It's
know.
literally
No,
every
there
time you
isn't.
start it, if it's not the default browser, it will ask you, hey, what do you want?
Come even come you. Yeah, it
Exactly. And I'm
completely
like,
does.
no,
Yeah.
F off. Like, I've made my choice. You don't need to ask me every time.
I finally stopped getting those messages. I switched to Fire back to Firefox a few months ago just because I got sick of of
I
Chrome.
prefer.
And when I first had this machine, it would constantly ask me to move to Edge. And it doesn't. I don't know if I changed the setting or
Yeah, you'd be
something,
totally
but
default. It's
if I'm
Windows.
back, I'm back on Firefox again. And it works fine.
Windows is well behaved if you tell it that this is the browser I want to use. This is my default thing for opening links. It's quietly well behaved. I mean, Edge, if you open it, will keep going, oh, please, me. And you just say, no, go away.
Yeah, but
But,
that's exactly the annoying part, that it doesn't respect it. It literally every time it's like, hey, I'm not the default. Do you want me to be the default? I'm like, no, I already told you. No.
I
Go
do not want to
away.
be the default.
And the thing is, my work machine's so filled with antivirus and Christ knows what other things that my memory's gone. So the by the time I open,
Which
like this
memory?
week, yeah, exactly. There's not much in here left. But by the time I add Teams, by the time I've
Are you in
opened Teams,
severance?
That
a
may be a
browser.
different problem.
Yeah, you could well be. And that my colleague suggested this. But by the time I've opened an RDP with, by the time I've got RDP, Teams, PowerPoint, and a web browser open. I've more or less used
Yeah,
most of
I
my
mean,
RAM. And you're
like,
thinking, what the hell am I doing? What the hell's going on here?
Windows
I've
took
got.
half of it, and then the other half is like almost the other half is Teams, and then the rest takes a little bit.
Yeah. And it's all bits of Edge, even though I've not opened Edge, because Teams is basically an Echelon app with Edge running up its ass.
It
So
is.
that's even more of a pain in the butt. Oh, Jesus. My replacement, as I've said many times, will be a Mac. I've had enough now. But
I
yeah,
mean,
no, I started to find
not
out.
as if you don't have similar issues with Edge on the Mac, like as I said, and
No,
Teams
well, God,
the same shit. Like it doesn't matter,
that's fine. I'm
but
gonna, I can,
yeah.
I can
But
have the use of
there's
Safari and
other,
Firefox over there and be a happy boy.
the exactly. I think my point is, I'm actually using I'm using Safari and I'm using Orion, which is a WebKit-based browser.
Oh yeah, I played with that yonks ago.
It's
Yeah.
really cool browser. But I think, I mean, my point is in general, I think for anybody like us who cares about browsers, I would strongly suggest to see what alternative browsers you could support, because I think it is
Yeah.
important. Chrome is a default, and it's probably not a bad default for a lot of people. I mean, we as people who care really about privacy and all of that can have different opinions about it, but I think for most people it gets the job done. I mean, could we
It
get them
does.
to switch? Yes, but is it worth the fight? Probably not. But at
Right.
least strengthen the alternative market so that we have alternatives, because right now it's looking
Yeah.
like Apple is slowly losing because they're getting regulated out of that market. And Chrome is basically taking all of that. And I
Yeah.
don't think that is a good market to be in if Google basically controls the browser market and controls what privacy settings you get, because they can just decide, well, I don't like plugins don't get anything, websites don't get anything, and everything gets routed through Google. They can do that because
Right.
it's their browser. They can literally just put that in, and there's nothing other than switching away, which most people won't do. that you can do. Nothing.
Yeah, I know that Firefox has had a lot of problems, over the last two
In
or
the
three
past,
years,
yeah.
both technically and how they operate. But the
They've
thing I
solved
like
it.
about that is Mozilla doesn't run an ad network.
Yeah, and they've solved
Like,
those problems. They had some technical
yeah,
issues and some
the
governance
technical issues,
issues.
I think, yeah.
And I've
But
just been
there
dropping.
are a few websites. Every, maybe one out of 100 websites when I'm buying an airline ticket or something, it won't work, and I'll have to go to Chrome.
But here's the thing, and I've noticed that, and I've complained to websites about that. That is not Firefox's fault. That is usually
Yeah.
that someone did something very, very stupid, like the
Lazy.
developer, and only tested it in Chrome. That's
It's
usually what
lazy.
happens.
It's lazy.
Right.
It's
Well,
lazy. It's
it's super
laziness.
lazy. It's super
It's
lazy.
laziness. Well,
It always
the thing
is.
that
It doesn't
cracks
work
me up
somewhere
is
else. It's laziness.
when I run into that, it's like I scratch my head and think, is this the year 2000? Haven't you guys figured this out? This was a problem 25 years ago. I thought we solved this.
I've literally complained to our Austrian postal service because I wanted to order a service from their website, and I was on Safari, both on mobile and on like my Mac, and I was not able to complete the transaction because there was an error in their JavaScript code that it was simply wrong, and it did work in Chrome because it was a little bit more forgiving with errors. Safari simply said, well, there's a security rule that says you're not allowed to do that, so now I'm not allowing you to do that. Chrome said, I don't care about security rules, let's just do it. And I told them that, and the response was, well, then just use Chrome. And I'm like, on my iPhone. Good idea. How about you tell your
second,
freaking developers to not do stupid shit
right.
like this? How about that?
The world's second most popular browser, and you won't support it correctly.
So
Yeah.
that, and
Craziness.
as that,
Good
and that
plan.
was not Safari's fault. That they it did. I checked it. Like I run development teams. I'm a developer. I know. I checked it, and I said, no, 100%. This is not a bug in Safari. This is simply something that they are not doing correctly. Fix it.
I've just dropped a couple of the best alternative ones out there now that I
Thank you.
think one the one two that I'd recommend. I mean, I'm a serial browser hopper of playing around with all manner of things. I really like Xen, which is based on Firefox. So it's very nice. It follows the modern kind of look where you've got tab tree down the left-hand side, and then you've got everything else in the center. That's quite nice. I keep coming to-ing and fro-ing with that one, and Vivaldi, which is probably the for my mind. The best of the Chrome-based browsers. The developers are very much independent, very
You mean
much want to do their own
Chromium, not
thing.
Chrome, because
And it's
Chromium
quite
is
and
the open
exactly it's
source
yeah,
engine
it's the
behind it.
Chromium. It's got the Chromium back, it's got Chromium back end, and they seem to have less fingers in pies that make me worry. Brave has more fingers in pies of things that make me slightly worry that they're just swapping one overlord for another, so I don't particularly like them. Even though a lot of people think it's good. I'm really slightly suspicious of them, but I'd recommend either of those for a play around if you want something else to try. Vivaldi and Zen.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. I've heard of Vivaldi. I've not heard. I've no. Actually, I've heard of Zen as well. I think Brett Terpstra mentioned it. And I threw in the other one from
Oh
KJ
yeah, right.
Orion. I said
I had
WebKit
that installed
based,
on
only available for Mac and iOS because it's a say more Mac browser, but it's a really good alternative to Safari because it's based on the same engine, but they have some different opinions about what the UI should allow or not allow, what it should do or not do, than Apple
just
does, which is
downloaded
total, which is the benefit of an open source engine. You can build on top of the same engine, it renders everything the same, but you have different features. So they're, for example, supporting Firefox and Chrome extensions fully, stuff like that.
Yeah,
Little
that sounds
things.
really good. I love it.
Yeah,
I give that a try.
vertical tabs. Apple doesn't have it. It does have it, which is actually really
Vertical
cool.
tabs is one of those. It's one of those. That's one of those design decisions I think are a pain in the ass, though. Honestly, they are. Vertical tabs.
Depends on the. I have a lot of tabs open. For me, it works better.
On my big monitor, it becomes difficult to figure out which one of the tabs is I'm opening. On this thing, I lose too much real estate for it to be of any use. So I can never see it between two stools for me of each
Yeah,
usefulness.
I mean, the thing is in KG in this case, or no, sorry, in Orion, you can choose vertical, horizontal, compact. They have three options, so it's whichever one you want. But they give you the options, whereas Apple has
You don't
very
have
strongly
to, yeah, you don't have
opinion.
to use it, yeah.
Exactly. No, it's totally fine. But we're not talking about Apple this day. Yeah, good one, good story. Tom, you threw in a story about Windows 10.
It's actually a story kind of related to Ian's story. It's about basically garbage journalism. Let's put it that way. And it's on ZDNet. This is for the second week in a row. I have an EdBot story as my story. And the story is about how every quarter, when companies like StatCounter release statistics talking about things like, for example, which browsers are most popular, you know, over the last 5 years, or in this case, comparing the different versions of Windows that are in use. And I think the key points of the story are, one, he's pointing out lazy journalism. I think the second thing is, is really about doing critical thinking and understanding clickbait when you see it, because this data is based on it's based on views and clicks. It's not based on how many PCs have Windows 10 versus Windows 11. It's all web-based stuff. So who knows? Maybe Windows 10 people use the web more than 11 or vice versa. Who knows? But it's, you know, it gives you an idea, but it's not that accurate. And he also talks about the data sources. You know, StatCounter does not have access to everybody's website statistics. They only have a very small portion, you know, of the millions of websites out there and the browsing that is done. And the last thing is more a mathematical thing, which is, you know, looking at data average, you know, with the, you know, rolling average or smoothing it out is much better than just looking at the ups and downs. And so he points out one case where, you know, for 1 month, Windows 11 had a jump and Windows 10 had a decrease, sort of an unusual decrease. And all the headlines were, you know, Windows 10 is, people are running from Windows 10 and stuff like that.
I mean, I mean, to be fair, Microsoft has announced that Windows 10, at least official support, is coming to an end, I think, this summer, if I remember correctly.
Towards the end of the year, October, I think.
Yeah, something like that. And so, I mean, there is probably at least a little bit more of a run, if you can call it that, of people who are like, okay, maybe it's time to switch now. And that might be more companies and people that are doing that now, because so till now there was, for some of them, simply no reason to do. And they're like, maybe we should switch now before it runs out of support. So there's I don't know if you've called it a run, but there's some maybe increase in migrations now.
All valid points. And I think what he was saying, and EdBot talked about those things, right? The end of life announcement and so on. And, you know, it's the usual story. Windows 10, everybody kind of liked it. It was pretty solid. Windows 11, when it came out, originally had a lot of issues, you know, but 3 or 4 years later, it's in reasonable shape now. And so certainly there is a decline, and it's not as the migration to Windows 11 is not as fast as the migration to Windows 10.
Yeah.
You know, but who cares? I think the real point of this is you really have to be careful when you see articles about this stuff and read through it very carefully, whether it's an operating system, how many iPhones versus Android phones are out there. You know, it's really hard to get good, high quality information for this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Number one. And number two, the way you look at the data is extremely important.
That is true. I mean, isn't it the saying, don't trust a statistic you haven't forged yourself?
Yep, pretty much.
again, we get back to lying, right?
Yes.
We are completely back to lying.
Absolutely back to lying. No, but I really like I mean, the one thing, I mean, Microsoft probably has this data because they have they have the report, the systems are reporting back for software updates and whatever. It's probably not 100% accurate because there's like air gap machines and whatever that don't report back, but like overall,
but it's
they
probably
have,
the most accurate. Yeah, yeah,
I would say more accurate than what was it? What's the website? Stats Counter, which
right.
does collect it from websites and other sources. So. There's, I mean, I don't know if in example, which probably is what happened here in December, a lot of companies are like take time off and then their machines, the work machines don't get used. So that can
probably,
skew
right.
that if those work machines are all Windows 10 machines, then all of a sudden the Windows 11 numbers or the percentages look way better. Like, oh, more
because
people are now on Windows 11 because that's what
like...
people are using now. And
so
then it goes
back.
Weirdly,
people got new Windows PCs
September.
For Christmas.
Oh, that's true. That also adds that. That's true. New PCs come like the market. People are using them more because they took time off. So all of a sudden,
right.
it looks like they're being used. I mean, also that said, if you correlate data from a lot of websites and you what we just talked about that the fingerprinting, the tracking maybe is not perfect
yeah.
or it's not working at all, then you don't know whether the same user visited the website twice or if it's two machines with Windows 11. So all of a sudden, your data is kind of skewed that way. So
yeah,
that can
page views do not equal the number of PCs.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
so
you know, again, it can give you some idea, but you really have to look at trends over a much longer period.
Yeah,
than
trends
one
over
month.
Time, because the error is,
yeah.
as I said, except for Christmas, maybe the error is usually, let's say, more evened out. So over time, you just get the trend, whether it's 100% correct or whether everybody was counted twice, doesn't matter because the trend direction is what counts. And you see that also in the graph that ZDNet did, where it's like, yeah, okay, if you do this, you add a margin of error, you kind of smooth out the trend line, you see, yes, Windows 10 is not a surprise, is declining, and
right.
Windows 11 is growing. Yes, okay, that's kind of what you think you will see. And if you look at it, I would say somewhere this year it will probably cross over.
But if you wrote an article that was entitled Windows 11 adoption is going as normal,
Windows 10
would make a headline, would it?
Yeah, or the headline is, hey, people are migrating from Windows 10 to Windows 11. That
right.
is not a very interesting headline. Yes, this is kind of...
Just take one big company, say, that's finally decides to trash all their Windows 10 machines over the course of a month, and you're going to see that change in the graph, aren't you, completely?
Yeah. Like, government switches out their machines or whatever.
Right. He shares some of the headlines that were written based on his data. Windows 11 hits a new market share milestone as Windows 10's death looms on the horizon.
Oh, the death. Oh, so dramatic.
Millions of Windows users suddenly upgrade.
Mm-hmm. Or do they?
God, it's such lazy journalism, isn't it? It is just such junk. I mean, I've been seeing these things of Windows 11, Windows 10 will die soon. Windows 10 will die soon practically every time I look at
it. It will. It will die soon. With soon being probably a very, very long time.
In a very long time. The same way that 7 still kicks
10,
around because people still use it and don't see a problem with what they've got.
Oh.
Windows 8 still shows up on the chart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Windows XP is probably around still, some people.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I just enjoyed, you know, he did a good job of sort of identifying all the issues. The thing that caught my mind was his way of smoothing out the data, which I said, finally, somebody is smoothing out data. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And also, also not just smoothing out, but also showing the hour. Margin
showing the error bar,
which is also important. In
the error bars are important. For any of this data, the error bars are important.
Yes, yeah. If your error bars are bigger than your graph, then maybe your data is not so good.
Be careful with error bars. Yeah.
Yes. Error bars. I don't know. I don't have a good transition to my story.
Do you like to eat error bars? Like protein bars?
Like Copilots? No, I don't know. I'm thinking about getting a pilot's license. So speaking of pilots, there's a transition. Copilot. GitHub Copilot is, there were new announcements today, I think, or yesterday. I don't remember. Might have been yesterday at this point. But either way, everything is AI. But this kind of connects with a really interesting discussion I had last night, very late or early this morning for me, with a bunch of developers and other tech people on in space about kind of the future of AI in development and which, like, where are we going and how far away are we from the kind of Star Trek approach of you just say, computer, generate me, I don't know, generate me a foe for Mr. Data. And it just generates that for you. There's no coding required. It's literally, it just does everything for you. It generates the entire program for you. How far away are we from that? And this is for sure, I mean, we're, my prediction, 8 to 10 years away from that, fully, 100%. But there is a bunch of steps in that direction that are already happening and are happening more and more and faster and faster. And these announcements from GitHub are kind of in that vein, in that direction. One thing that caught my eye is they have a new feature called Vision. And what it does is you can basically attach screenshots, photos, diagrams, whatever you have in like, let's say, artifacts to a Copilot session, and it will generate the interface, the code, the alt text, everything. So it's basically, you can give it a UX design and say, hey, I need this in whatever, Angular, this, or wow, whatever template language, and it will generate it. So it's really cool for prototyping. You have a UX thing, you want to test it out with some people, just generate it, have people try it. But also for development, you can just literally say, well, I need this, do it, and it will do it. Maybe we don't need front-end developers anymore in the future, who knows? I think we're a little bit away from that still, but it is really, really helpful. And I don't know, the marketing team could have a screenshot or like a design right from a website and simply say, hey, like, generate the stuff for me. Or take a screenshot, annotate something, and say, put a button in here, and you just draw it on it. Say, button, says whatever. And then throw it back into the chat, and it just does it for you. It's like, oh, yeah, you want a button here that does this? Yeah, sure, why not? Easy peasy. So it was already available in VS Code for a little while as kind of a early beta, kind of. But now it is native. The other one was deprecated. This is a native feature now in GitHub Copilot. So all you need is the API key and the subscription for it. For sure.
Naturally. So would you consider this, I was going to say, part of the grunt work of programming? It's getting rid of some of the more mundane tasks, so yes, that you can focus on the higher value task.
100%. I mean, a lot of it is I know that from my development teams. A lot of it is you get a design from a UX designer, like, this is what we want it to look like, and then you go in and you have to dissect it into the components and what are the distances and what are the fonts and what font sizes and whatever.
Right. That's a lot of
dissecting it and then then putting that into like a structure and template. And this might be quite early and it might have to get better, but this, I can totally see this being, hey, like, the template is basically there for you, and all you need to do is, even with the support of Copilot, add the logic behind it and say, and even that you can then do with Copilot and say, okay, and yeah, if you click this button, then this and this should happen, and it should connect to this API in the backend and whatever. Like, you basically start describing, it's more descriptive programming than actually coding stuff yourself.
Right.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I, it's kind of where I think it's going. Like, at some point, Tom, I think you will be able to just say, hey, I need an app that does X.
Right.
And the hard part will be describing what it does for you, that you get exactly what you want. It might be a little bit trial and error, an iterative process to get there, but you will be able to do that, I think, at some point, like maybe set eight, my prediction, 8 to 10 years.
I'll start with simple things like bubble sorts.
Yeah, that it can do today. That's not a hard.
I could probably do it. Yeah.
No, that is not a problem. No, but it's like for simple websites, you can do that today. You can literally tell a ChatGPT or a Copilot, I need a website, whatever. We need a podcast website. I want it kind of decent, these elements. I want these and these pages, and this is how it should be. And it will generate a template for you. I'm pretty sure that it can do that today, because that is, if it's just purely design, there's, I think, enough data in already available. It's not that complex. I mean, it's kind of boring probably, because it doesn't do the creative, really creative stuff that proper designers do. But I mean, for you, for your personal podcast, why not? Yeah, so that's, yeah, I've been using it more and more, and I'm quite impressed with what you can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's some other features that they added. There's kind of improvements to the suggestions when you're coding. So it used to be basically wherever your cursor was in VS Code, it would kind of suggest, okay, what could be next? And it was kind of dumb sometimes. But now they're kind of taking more scope into like what you've typed before, for example, what is before and after, what the file name is, stuff like that. So it's getting smarter and taking more context into account for what you might be doing.
So the ambit is bigger. That's got to be much more difficult for the inference engine, yes. Right? Because your ambit is so much bigger.
Yes, exactly. It's more difficult to get right. It's easy to do it. It's just more difficult to get right, because you can just take more data and say, well, whatever, but the output might be
what's
crap.
Next. Yeah.
Yeah, but
now, this is all still LLM based, right? Or is it?
For the most part, yes. There is a big chunk, I think, is an LLM. I think there are some other bits and pieces in there, but yes. Yeah, I mean the reason this works well is, one, coding is very structured, and it's also, there's tons of, it's a very simple language, right. In a sense. I mean, there's some things where people have whatever German variables versus English variables and German comments versus English comments, but more or less that doesn't matter as much, because it's a variable. What is named, it can infer probably without even reading.
Yeah, so the data that you have to train on is A, readily available, and B, it's not such
especially
a huge
for
solution space.
I mean, think about that.
Right.
GitHub
you basically
has,
have all the,
I think
you have
GitHub
all the
is
data.
The biggest, I would assume right now, it is the biggest repository of code.
It's got to be. I mean, it's like training video by using YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's literally what Google's doing. Yeah, that's exactly what's happening.
Well, it's good to see that there are actual, real practical uses of AI that aren't the sort of, we're going to replace all jobs with AI kind of story,
yeah, we've messed with it before. We were trying to knock up a little bit of code for a lab or something, and we don't really need to be the best or the most precise thing in the world. We've used it a couple of times and it's worked quite well at that.
Yeah.
So it's been kind of interesting way of using it. And
yeah,
prototyping, as you say, and that sort of stuff, which again, same thing, works perfectly well.
I mean, I've been using it a bunch, and I mean, I don't do a lot of coding these days, but sometimes I'm just like, I need a little script. I'm working on a change on a script or something. And I'm like, could I figure this out now? Yes, 100%. I could look up what the one, there's usually, it's, all developers know that no matter how long you've worked in a language, there's always a couple things that you keep forgetting. It's like whatever, for loops.
Is it semicolon?
Yeah. No, it's more like for loops in Bash or some weird thing. It's like, yeah, you use it often enough that you're like, I should know this, but you always forget something like in there. Or you're like, you're not 100% sure. All the weird options that are available or whatever. So you look it up. Right.
Yeah, of course. Boards, the thing is it a for loop or a do loop or a while loop or a...
Yeah, well, I mean that.
I always get that mixed up.
Yeah, exactly. True. And I mean, I always say like development these days is a whatever IDE you have and a web browser next to it.
Yeah.
Because anything you want to know, you can look up. That used to be the case. Nowadays, it is the IDE and maybe an LLM or ChatGPT next to it, or more and more integrated simply in your IDE.
As
I said, I used it recently. I was like, yeah, I mean, I could now, I had to do some rather complex logic. And I was like, yeah, I can, I mean, I've written scripts like that. I've written Bash for, I don't know, 20 something years. I can do it. I could figure it out. I could look up the two or three things that I've forgotten and figure out the logic I want and whatever. but why should I? I just ask ChatGPT and say, I need a bash script that does this, this, and this, has this as an input, has this as error cases to catch, as whatever, and it generated the whole thing. And I, like, there were little things I had to adjust and give it some let's say clarification, say, hey, no, I meant this and this, or rename this variable to that, whatever. And then I just copied it out, copied it in my script, fixed the things that I wanted to change, because it wasn't exactly 100% what I wanted. There were little things where I'm like, you know, I want to do this differently, or I want to have different error message or whatever. But little things, and then it was done. And it did at least 70% of the work.
That's pretty magical.
Yeah, so that's kind of the thing. Speaking of magical, there's one extra bit that they're doing. It and that I think is really cool. One of the problems you have a lot of times in development is you have a change, but that change has to be applied across a lot of files, or that change kind of implies changes in other files. And as a developer, yeah, you can do it, but it's very tedious sometimes. Like, you have hundreds of classes and all of them need the same change. But it wasn't abstracted away because it wasn't exactly identical. It's just the same pattern everywhere. And with, it's called, I think, agents, or one of the agent mode, at least, multi-file edit, you can literally prompt it and say, I want this and this change to be done on all files that match these and these criteria.
That would be useful.
And that's, that yeah, really exactly. Nice. And it does it. It's like, oh, I need to refactor this. I need to refactor these 500 classes to do whatever, to add this method and do this and this. And it does it. And then you can go in and check it and fix it where necessary. But it did the tedious work is already done. And that, I think, is also pretty cool. Yeah. So it's getting more and more. The future is coming. Like I said, question how far it is away, but at some point, Tom, nobody will need to open Visual Studio Code. You will just open some form of AI
open
and tell
computer.
It what you want. Open computer.
Open
you will
computer.
Probably talk to your computer and say, I don't know, hey, I need a video, I'm creating a podcast. I need a video streaming app and I don't want to even think about which one to buy, whatever. Just build me one.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, sure. Here, done. What
yeah,
else do
there
you want?
Is in, there is innovation that's useful.
Yeah.
Completely. Wow. Is a computer. Make me this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need transparent aluminum.
Yeah. Computer, fix the microphone in my AirPods.
Yeah. Well, that might be hard. Well, you never know. Maybe in the future with matter conversion, matter energy conversion, and whatever, it's just,
yeah, there you go.
Sure,
yeah.
It dematerializes your AirPod, fixes, and just well, actually, just materializes a new one. Anyway, we should probably really quickly talk about the chat and then do cool things. So we have a really cool chat where we have been dropping all the cool links that we talk about. So I see here, for example, Ian dropped in the links to the browsers, Zen Browser, Vivaldi, all of that. We have, of course, all the stories that we talked about. We'll have links to the cool things in a minute. Long story short, we have a really cool chat, and if you want to join it and we record live, you just head over to live.britishtechnetwork.com, and there's the live stream, and right next to it is the chat window. Like, it is on YouTube, on Twitch, on probably every other platform at this point. There's a video, next to it is a chat. There's a input box, you just start typing it on. It generates really funny names like Unraveled Alpatani, whatever that is. So it does generate really cool names. If you don't like it, just go up top. There's a little purple button. Click on it, change name, change it, whatever you want. But there's literally no registration required, nothing. And the chat is available when we record this show, which is Thursdays, 7 p.m. UK time, every week for this very show. And, by the way, Fridays, 4 p.m. UK time for the Mac show. So tomorrow, we're going to talk about some Apple stuff, and nobody has some stuff to talk about. Like, I already have some ideas. So that's how easy the chat is. But if you can't, won't, don't want to, whatever it is, reason, listen to this in the future, ask your, actually, if you ask your future AI overlords to give you the links for the website, for what we talked about today, it will probably use our chat transcript to know what we talked about. And that you can find on britishtechnetwork.com/chat. Select the date, and if you select today's date, which is February 6, 2025, you will see everything that we talked about in the chat today. Now it's time for a cool thing. I was like, did I forget something? No, cool things.
There we go.
And fast fingers, Ian is already in on it, and
yeah,
has some point, has two links even.
Two links, because it's a two for one. It's both on Amazon, and they're kind of related in as much as it's cooking, food. Mm-hmm. We all have food on this show, and so there's two things. One's a very simple thing. It was just an ingredient that I discovered when I was at a cafe. Crispy chili sauce. And it's chili, crispy chili in oil.
Crispy chili.
And it's absolutely awesome. It adds so much flavour.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant. A dollop of that on some scrambled eggs or with some avocado and some scrambled eggs, and it is absolutely bob on. Or throw a little bit into a curry if you're like me. I've got to cook for multiple palates at home. Some of the rest of them don't like as hot food as I like, so I have this and I can sling another spoonful in and I get the chili I want. So that's fantastic. The second was an unexpected Christmas present from my mother-in-law. She knows I love to cook. And she got some of these and thought how good they were. Ian had liked them, so I got one given for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh yeah, all right, it's another thing to sit and gather dust in the kitchen. And then I used it, and it's bloody brilliant. It's a really nice design. It's a great chopping board, and they fold up. So you can squeeze, so once you've cut your onions or whatever, you can squeeze it and then just tip them straight into the pot when you're cooking. And that's a real nice feature. And I like them, they're quite non-slip boards and fairly easy, so I bought one of the smaller ones as well. Really good. So that's me, is just some random fun of kitchen-based things. And the crispy chili is the biz. Honestly.
Oh, I could totally see that. Crispy chili. I mean, anything is better than chili, right?
The old gam man crispy chili in oil. It's a Chinese product, and it is the dog's ball. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I was in a restaurant, it was just eggs and avocado on toast sort of thing that came, was brought out to me, and it had a dollop of it. And I go, oh, that's so good. What's that? And I was talking to the people around it, saying, oh, it's this stuff. We only got it off Amazon. It's dead same. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So immediately ordered a tub, and it's really good.
Very nice.
Highly recommend it.
When you were mentioning crispy chili and eggs, I'm like,
Yes,
yeah, that's kind of a funny name. It's a funny name.
Crispy chili gamma.
No, gamma. Yeah, it's dead good. It's dead good. You can buy it. I'm sure your average Chinese grocer will have it because it's soybean oil and chilies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess.
But yeah, it's very, very tasty.
Very cool.
Looking at the reviews, I'm now on my fifth or sixth jar of this stuff.
So what you're saying is you have to be careful. It might be addictive.
Possible. Possible.
Well, nice thing. Tom, you have an app and watch it.
I have an app.
No, an app. Watch
it. It's an iOS app. So my pick is an iOS app. It's called Watch Duty. And it's an app. I didn't check, but this is probably only the US. Maybe it's not such a great pick, but
no,
it's an app that basically aggregates a lot of data to help you track fires, basically. Mm-hmm. That's the primary intent, and became really popular during the LA fires.
It did, yes. Yeah. Everybody was talking about it.
And this team put together this app, which aggregates information from various sources so that you can pull up the app, click on a fire, it'll tell you, you know, what the status of the fire is. It'll give you evacuation zone information on the map. You can click and get more information. It puts evacuation locations in there. And, you know, if you were in LA in a very residential area with fires all around you, this was kind of a lifesaver.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard so many people in the LA area that were using it. They talked about it. It is, by the way, and I put the link in. It's also available on Google Play and it's also on the web browser. So because
Okay.
you said it's an Apple app or iOS app. No, it's like it's everywhere,
Yes,
which
thank
is
you. Thank you
important.
for that.
Yeah,
And
and it's
they
I
have
also
an
see
and
it's like a 401c3 nonprofit, so which is also pretty cool
right.
actually.
Right. They
I
have a
like that.
nice website as well with a lot of good information on it.
Yeah.
And I know my niece lives in the LA area, and she was, a mile or two from some of the evacuation zones. So,
Yeah.
every day she, every hour she was looking at it to see if they needed to evacuate or not. So it was super helpful. Anyway, good app. Hopefully
Yeah.
you'll never have to use it, but it's a good app.
Yeah. I mean, if you live in where you live, I think chances are ever you might, or in your lifetime, sometime actually
Right.
need this. Unfortunately, at least, even if it doesn't affect you directly, you might be at risk. So,
Yes.
yeah, it's really nice. I also see that they have memberships and stuff like that. It's not super expensive. I mean, you get a lot of stuff for free, but
Yep.
if you want to support it, it's like, yeah, you can get like alerts, firefighter flight trackers, more alerts from all counties, and it's like $25 a year, $80 a year
Right.
for the or actually. First, okay, $99 or $100 a year for the full-on pro version that does everything. So, pretty, I mean, not expensive for what it does. Nice. Yeah, I've heard so much. It's only in the US for now, but who's to say there's fires and other disasters in other parts of the world? Why not?
Yeah, I think the challenge would be you'd have to get a developer that would understand the local data pipelines that you can tap into and make the adjustments to the app. But I would
Yeah.
hope that that would be a fairly simple thing to do.
I mean, they can probably partner with like some country. I mean, even why not a country or state or whatever and work with them on it. I mean, there is in Europe, there is systems in place, but they're not very good, and this is a really good system. So if you can just tap into the data but then use it in this app, then
Yeah,
done.
and the big problem was that the data wasn't aggregated. So you'd have to go to every city or county website
Yes.
to see about the evacuation zones, and it was listed in Cartesian coordinates that nobody understood.
Yes.
And
Yeah.
so seeing it on a map
Shown
is a little
on
bit more useful.
a TV that nobody pays attention to.
Right, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. No, this is really good. I've said I kind of wanted to come to Europe. I said there's the European Union has been trying to do something like this. Kind of, but I mean, you know how that goes with governments and
Oh,
especially EU.
yeah.
Like,
Right. So
yes.
maybe a startup opportunity. You could start the equivalent of 501(c) or 501(c) in Vienna.
Yeah, why not? No, but I mean, no, the smarter way is to see that watch duty also works here, because why not? I mean, people travel all the time. Like, why reinvent it if you can just see that you can expand it? And then if someone from the US travels in Europe or someone from Europe travels in the US, they already have all the information, and if something happens, they're informed.
That would be pretty cool if
Yeah.
a bunch of groups around the world popped up to have a little local support for
Yeah,
different
why not?
versions of it.
This would be really cool. Well, cool idea. Very cool thing. My cool thing is not as cool as yours, I have to say. But it is cool. It's the Ergotron LX, I think. I had it open and now I've lost the tab. There it is. LX, yeah. Desk monitor arm. There's different colors for it. I have the aluminum one. Polished aluminum, if you're in Europe.
Aluminium. Aluminium.
yeah, but I've bought a, let's say, other desk clamp for a monitor many, many years ago, from the Amazon place, and it was fine. I kind of had a look at even back then. I was kind of aware of Ergotron, and I was kind of. But I was like, I don't know, is it worth the money? Because they are a little bit more expensive. Having bought it, and when I bought this monitor, I was like, okay, I mean, the monitor is like, whatever, $700, I'll spend the 100 for a proper monitor this time, a proper arm. It's really good. I was really surprised how sturdy, how well built it is, how easy it was to assemble and everything. It was like there was an instruction sheet with it, but I really didn't need it because it was very obvious how it is to be used. They have a million different versions of it depending on what you need. But this one is the one I bought, the LX. But they have like ones with for heavier, for lighter. They have with higher posts if you want to stack monitors. They have with two arms or with like one like kind of a bar almost behind the monitor that kind of they can clamp two monitors to it. Stuff like that. So they have a million different ways. But yeah, this is a desk clamp version. You can also, if you have a grommet, you can also screw it to the desk. I didn't, so that's, yeah, it's really good. It was super easy. It's metal. It's not a lot of plastic. The one thing that impressed me, I have that with the cheaper one. The problem is, it's kind of fragile and wobbly, where you have to like tighten the screws really tightly so it doesn't move around. But then it's still, you touch it or look at it and it kind of moves. And then you have to redo it. It's kind of not super stable, and moving it around is kind of a pain. And you kind of fear it's gonna break. And I didn't have that
Right.
with this one. Like this one was like it felt like you'd attached it and you could move it around however you wanted and it didn't care. It's like perfectly balanced for the monitor and everything. It's like the it just works.
Looks
Looks
like
nice
they're a
is
that one goes up
couple
to
hundred
30, it
bucks.
goes up to 34 inch screens, which quite a lot of them
Yes.
don't. I know when I was looking for one a
Yes.
while back.
Yes, this is a 32. So yeah, that's part of the reason why I bought that. So and also the weight you have to factor in. It's like I think this goes to
Right.
I think 12 kilos, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, 12
Yeah, and I mean
kilos.
mine is only 6, I think, the monitor. So it can handle actually way more than it needs to. But that's a good thing because you kind of want a little bit room maybe as well, that it can handle a little bit more than it needs to.
Margin is a good thing on something like
Yes.
this.
Yes. Yeah. So a Visa mount, I forgot. Yes, a Visa, of course. Visa
Yeah,
mount.
Visa mounts are the best thing.
Yes, that's usually what I buy. So yeah, I said I was really impressed by it. I'm using it right now and I can move my monitor around if I want to. And I'll probably one of these weeks I'll just buy a second one and replace the other one because it has served me well for 7 years by now, I think. But I really like the other one better, and I think I'll just gonna replace it. It wasn't that expensive. It's like, how much is it on Amazon right now? It's like, okay, it's $200.
$100. Yeah.
$200. But it's like, the monitor is expensive, and you don't want anything to happen to it. So the $200 I will invest it. And this is gonna last. I mean, yeah, the other one lasted 7 years, so that's probably gonna last 7, 10 years easy. Like, and you can attach whatever. You buy a new monitor and you keep the clamp. Like, move it around if you need to.
Looks good.
So that's my cool thing.
Indeed.
$200 on Amazon, and it tells me $104 shipping and import fees to deliver to Austria. I'm like, yeah, I didn't have to pay that much. That's just your US store. No, it was like 100, maybe it was 150 euros in Germany. Anyway, I think that closes this very podcast. I want to say thank you both of you for doing this once again with me, like every week.
No
And
problem.
I'm going to start with Tom this time because I started with Ian opening the podcast. So Tom, thank you for being here. Thank you for everything, for all the stories you always bring. It's a lot of fun. And let the people know where they can find out more about you.
You're welcome. And you can find me on Mastodon. I am Tom F at sfba.social.
Very cool server, SFBA. I really like them.
It is
and I
good.
really like the people there. And Ian, also thank you for the stories and for everything you're doing, being here every week,
No
bringing the
problem.
British to the British Tech Network, the token
We need
Brit.
to have one still here if the other one's
Exactly.
only part-time. We need to keep one of us going. So
Exactly.
yes, thank you very much. You can find me LinkedIn. My name's Ian Grant. As you probably know, I work for Veeam. Anywhere else you can use, you can start to find me on the new things like Blue Sky and stuff like that. I'm starting to have a mess around with that a little bit on TikTok and Instagram, but again, I'm still messing around and learning those things, so don't expect lots of things posted by me. But I'm interested because a couple of things I'm helping some people out with, and I'm going to need to start working out how they work.
Yeah, and if they need any kind of certification, whether it's for nuclear submarines going to Mars or,
Oh, yeah.
well, backup solutions and so on, they
Yeah.
can reach out to you.
Exactly. That's what I'm for. That's what I do.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, for me, I'm here every week, Big Show, Max Show, so you'll see me tomorrow.
Which we are very grateful. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. And you can find everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com. I should really look into generating that with AI now, since it's anyway a static site generator. Maybe that's a good solution. Maybe I'll post more then. I have a really cool podcast with the usual interim host, which is Jeff. By the way, Jeff, all the best. He had to take care of some family, so I hope everything is going well. But we have a really cool podcast called Retro Rewatch, and I'm showing the mug again because I just love that mug. Retro Rewatch, we are rewatching Stargate SG-1. We just jumped into season two of Stargate SG-1, closing the kind of the gap or the cliffhanger. Now we're going into stuff that happens to Captain Carter in the new episode. If I manage to edit tonight, should be out by tomorrow or latest on Saturday morning. So depends a little bit on how busy life is. But
You
I'll
just
try to
need to say, "Hey, computer,
edit this
post
podcast.
edit podcast."
I'm getting very close to that, to be honest. I've been automating a ton of stuff. One thing I can mention is that we have a new way to doing transcripts, and the transcripts now also factor in who said what. And that is being, I mean,
Nice.
that is really nice. It's like we get automatic transcripts. They're way better quality because now it doesn't confuse who said what. And if we talk over each other, which happens sometimes, it doesn't get completely confused and doesn't know what you said at all. So that's been nice. And yeah, we have the transcript available. It's linked in the podcast if you want to have a look. So getting there, like AI, more and more. I'm using it. Editing is probably audio editing is probably one of the next thing because it's not that hard for what we're doing, honestly. So we'll get there. Anyway, this network, British Tech Network, we also have Mastodon at British Tech at techingout.social. We also have Blue Sky actually at BritishTechNetwork.com if you want to follow us there. We're posting stuff when we post on the yeah when we post our shows. And what did I forget? I think that's mostly it. At BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com, I think is still our email address. If you want to send Ewan a message and tell him that he missed the show again, and you can tell him that. Other than that, also thank Ewan and thank everybody in the background for supporting us, for being there, all the listeners and everybody. And yeah, with that, thanks everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye bye.